So I was thinking right before I came to get online that I probably should use a disclaimer. My mind feels a little bit like a magic carpet today. And so you're going to have to hang on to the fringes and just fly with me, okay? Maybe a bit mercurial, so hang on to your hat. And as you know, we do place these recordings and the text that I'm sharing from online, so you could perhaps go back and read that. But today the subject is, I thought for Memorial Day weekend, it would be good to remember that unity is hidden in variety, and also variety is hidden in unity. It goes both ways. And I thought if we could begin with a breath. It's the Darud that is often given, and with an image. In your mind's eye, could you imagine in front of you a dot and a circle, and between the two are space? We're going to do the phrase both ways. First, we're going to breathe in to the dot, breathing in toward the one, and breathing out to the circle, united with all. These symbols are very powerful symbols to our unconscious, and they exist in all abstract and spiritual art that is also abstracted at times in certain traditions. So again, breathing into the dot toward the one and out to the circle united with all. In toward the one and out united with all. In toward the one and out united with all. One more time on your own. Now just relax, but keep the image before you in your mind's eye. And now we're going to breathe out, concentrating on the circle towards the one, and breathing in, united with all. Out, circle towards the one, and in, dot, united with all. A few more times on your own. First, breathing out to the circle towards the one, and in, united with all. Hopefully, from this little experiment, you got a little glimpse of unity and variety and unity. It's a good practice. It's simple, but it's very profound. And it is the one I had the good fortune of knowing somewhat intimately Wally Ollie and also Pierce Shabda's really good friend. And we talked one time at a Jamiat of the Rouhaniyats, which I was always privileged to be invited as a guest. About this practice that we were privately talking in one of their rooms about this very special practice that was given by Mercer Samuel Lewis to his students. It helps to develop concentration, but it helps to develop this awareness of unity is hidden in variety, and variety hides the unity. It's hidden and it's there for us to concentrate on. So, let me start with a quote by an icon. This will also be repeated later in the text. He says, well, wait a minute, rewind, see? Hang on to the fringe of the magic carpet. Let's say the invocation, please, together. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit. Mercer teaches this. The wise one, by studying nature, enters into unity through its variety. Okay, I'm not quite sure what's happening there. I'm going to do something here on my computer, and could you please nod after? And I'm going to say something. I want to know if you can hear me. Can you still hear me? perfect. We won't be distracted by blips and blobbles. The one, by studying nature, enters into unity through variety. He goes on to say, we realize the personality of God by sacrificing our own. So we can sometimes get in our own way, and it obscures our view. View with a capital V. Well, on the post on the website, I don't think Premonitating posted this, but I left the quote. There are two different perspectives. One's by Vivekananda, you know, the great mystic, student, disciple of Ramakrishna. He really was someone that was quite forward-thinking in terms of interfaith awareness, which now is a big buzzword. But and then the other one's Umberto Eco, and he was an Italian philosopher and social critic. So Vivekananda says, this is different perspectives, unity in variety is the plan of the universe. Unity in variety is the plan of the universe. And Umberto Eco says, the beauty of the universe consists not only of unity in variety, but also variety and unity. So, you know, I bring this forward because this is like a universal thought that people are bringing forward to us. And I wanted to share it from different perspectives. So Hasrata Naidakan teaches us that it is said that the personality of a human being is quite comprehensible. Yeah, is it always? I find sometimes people can be a little puzzling. And then I go deeper. I find my own obscurations butt up against people sometimes, and I have to sit back and get a different perspective. But he says, it may be said that the personality of a human being is quite comprehensible. Since a human's actions exhibit a single individual, whereas God's personality has no clear identification of its own. God's personality has no clear identification of its own. And perhaps that's because God is indeed in everything and is manifesting to view. But do we have the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it and the sense to feel that? Mirsha talks about that as the eyes of the heart and the ears of the heart, opening our heart. We Sufis do that all the time. That's our goal. So the answer is that variety covers unity. Variety covers it. It's this kaleidoscope that covers it and maybe distracts us a little bit. Mirsha goes on to quote, Jalaluddin Rumi, and Jalaluddin Rumi puts it this way, hidden things are manifest by their own opposites. But as God has no opposite, God remains hidden. God's light has no opposite in the range of creation, whereby it may be manifested to view. So it remains hidden. And we are, perhaps that, well, we'll see. We'll get into this a little more down the way, and we'll work with the practice. Again, from Hasrata Naidakan, the wise person by studying nature enters into unity through its variety and realizes the personality of God as one by sacrificing one's own. A little bit different version of the quote that we began with. I'll read it again. A wise person by studying nature enters into unity through its variety and realizes the personality of God by sacrificing one's own. The question is, you know, who are we? WHO and who, HU, are we? Both. So Murshid gives us three scriptures that he feels are a way of revealing what was just said. And he says in the Hadith, it is said, one who knows oneself knows Allah or God. In the Bible, the Holy Bible, the kingdom of God is within you. Well, that's something we hear a lot, but do we really stop to really contemplate it? The kingdom of God is within you. That seed of God. I was reading yesterday and today about Meister Eckhart, you know, who was really quite a Sufi, but the church decided he was a heretic because he brought God closer to him. The Sufis do that too. Perhaps that's why we are very hidden. We've been hidden for, you know, hundreds of years, because that idea that God is within is a little scary to the politicians and the heads of various faiths. Well, if God's within me, why do I have to go to church? It's a question. Okay, the Vedanta says, self-knowledge is the real knowledge. Self-knowledge, know thyself and thy shall know God. God's relation to nature may be understood by analyzing the idea expressed in the words, I, myself. Okay, now this is going to get either very, very simple to some of you or very, very complex, but this is where Murshid, you really get the sense that he had the great ability to explain things in very simple terms, and yet he understood these deep philosophical concepts of linguistics of language, and also semiotics, signs and symbols, and how they come together to form new meaning. So listen to this. The next few paragraphs are that. They're very much about, sort of structural linguistics. He says, God's relation to nature may be understood by analyzing the idea expressed in the words, I, myself. This affirmation means the one individual, and at the same time, it identifies the dual aspect of the one. In this phrase, I is the possessor, and myself is the possessed. So also God, the unmanifest, is the possessor, and nature, the manifestation, is the possessed, which has its source hidden within oneself. I mean, this is the spiritual quest. This is the journey. This is what we're trying to discover. This is the reason for the practices, for the prayers, for being on a spiritual path. We're trying to understand this. And at times, as Pier Vilayat would say, we are trying to reconcile those things which appear to be irreconcilable. Okay, how can the one be many and the many be one? Well, we'll talk more about that in a moment. So Murshid goes on to say, the possessed could not have been created from anything other than the possessor's own self. So we're the creation, we're the idea, we're the birth of God's own self. As there existed none but the possessor before all this, it was just the divine intelligence of God. I'm going to touch clay and it will be man, woman, creation. Through the possessor and the possessed are considered to be two separate identities. In reality, they're one. Again, we come up with this idea, how could it be one? How could it be two? How could it be one? How could it? I always think about the prayer psalm. I think Gemma did a good job. She's done some lectures on the prayers, and maybe we'll continue along that theme in her own classes and others for us here today. But, praise be to the most supreme God, omnipotent, omnipresent, existing everywhere, all the time, without question, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-pervading, the only being, next line, take us in thy parental arms, it implies two. It's there in the Trinity, it's there in the prayers, then we have to try to reconcile that and try to understand the meaning of that. Not two, but one. Not one, not but, not one and two. I mean, it's really a very complex concept, I think. If you grasp it, great. Maybe you can come and teach the class. Anyway, I will go on. So the possessor realizes the possessed through the medium of his or her own consciousness, which forms three aspects. So again, the possessor realizes the possessed. God realizes us and manifestation through the medium of his or her own consciousness. If you don't understand anything about Tibetan Buddhism, this is talking about this all-pervading intelligence, consciousness through which everything's birthed. In Tibetan Buddhism, we call it the Dharmakaya. And it comes down, it descends down through the various kayas into manifestation. So it's noteworthy, these are kind of my own words around this, I'll go back and read this sentence again. The possessed could not have been created from anything but the possessor's own mind, as there existed none but the possessor. Although the possessor and the possessed are considered as two separate entities or identities, in reality they're one. The possessor realizes the possessed through the medium of his or her, its own self, own consciousness, which forms three aspects, the Trinity of the one being. Now, here's Murshid's talking about the Trinity, but he's also talking about it, well, he's going to clarify it in a moment, but let me just continue. I don't want to get off track here. And again, as I mentioned at the very beginning, I think it's noteworthy that today is recognized as the holy feast of the solemnity of the Holy Spirit. And they put that word solemnity in association with a feast day as being one of the most highly recognized days. So this is the solemnity of the Holy Spirit. And Murshid's talking about the Trinity of the one being. I'm going to kind of divert away because I think, you know, my Catholic is showing through, so excuse me in that, but, you know, towards the one, I say. We say things in different ways to different people at different times. And although people may have issues with the Catholic Church, if we look beyond the politics, there's something very beautiful, at least for me. And I've always been connected with the mystic saints anyway, so pepe. So in the Nicene Creed, which now has replaced the Apostles' Creed, very similar, but there's a few things that are different in it, in the Catholic Church, which I really like, because if you've read the Nicene Gospels, they're very mystical. So there's this word in there that, you know, when it first presented itself, I remember the stirring that it created in people. It's like, why are we using such a complex word? Because the word used to be one in being with the Father, or the Mother, or the Holy One. But it says consubstantial. They're using this word. And of course, this I think is significant because it comes from the Latin preposition cum. And cum means together with. So one in being with the Father, or consubstantial with the Father. Again, Father being a unitive term in my own mind. So hopefully you can translate that as well. It means that Christ was of one substance with the Father, Mother, but it also implies one substance with humanity, consubstantial. And this means Christ is co-substantial or consubstantial, referring that the two natures of Christ are human and divine. And of course, if we've studied at all, you know, this path, we know that's true. Well, I feel it. It's true. You don't have to believe me. It's an experience. So, a further meaning of the one and same substance, essence, or nature, especially, these are Murshid's words, not mine. He's bringing it in. It's not like just my Catholic showing. A further meaning of one and the same substance, essence, and nature, especially the divine persons of the Christian Trinity. So now he's bringing this in himself. And I want to just tell a little story. There's a beautiful saint, Saint Padre Pio. Padre Pio. He was an Italian saint, and he had the stigmata in his hands even longer than Saint Francis of Assisi had his stigmata. So he went through a great deal of personal suffering, and of course he was highly examined. You know, he's more of a contemporary saint. They put him in rooms without anything, all alone, you know, to see if he was self-inflicting these wounds, and he wasn't. There were so many pilgrims that went to his little village that they had to, they wouldn't allow him to say mass anymore. He was only allowed to say it for himself in his little cell. So this is really this kind of oppression of these great beings, but they nonetheless survive and emerge. But one of his duties was to hear confessions. So he was hidden, you know, behind the veil of the confessional, and this young man comes. And I remember reading it in his biography, and so I'm going to make it a very short story. There's a longer version of it. But this young man comes to confession, and he says, "Father, I'm having trouble with this idea of the Trinity. I don't understand how it could be one, you know, three beings in one and one being in three. This is just a contradiction to my logical mind." And Padre Pio, in his very beautiful way, it's so simple, but it's so obvious at the same time. He says, "Well, think about it. What substances go into making bread? You know, we have a little flour, we have maybe eggs, we have a little oil, we have water and so forth. And then we get a dough. But from that dough, we can make different varieties of bread, but it's one substance made in many forms." And I thought it was a beautiful, simple way of explaining that. And the man seemed to be satisfied with that explanation. So it's the one in many and the many in one. So back to Hazaret Anai Khan's words, he said, "God is regarded from the three points of view." So now we're getting into another subject of this, of unity and variety and variety and unity. And Murshid says, that is the views of personality, morality, and reality. He explains them. The first one, personality, according to the first view, God is the highest. We are dependent upon God, and we are God's most obedient servants. Well, praise God, inshallah we are. God willing we are. Or are we? Are we very self-will propelled, or do we surrender our will and become a servant of God? That's a beautiful thing if we can remember to do that. The second one, according to the second view, that of morality, God is all merciful and all loving, and the master or mistress or whatever other name you might want to give to the day of judgment, while all evil is from Satan. So here we have another polarity, evil and good, good and evil. And we see those little cartoons even, we see them in the movies, you know, the angels here, blah, 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 and the devil's here. Blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? That's in us. We also have to reconcile those things and admit them to ourselves. The great Tibetan saint, Atisha, every day, I think I've told this maybe even recently, so excuse the redundancy, but he had two little pouches in his pocket, and one pocket had little black stones, and one pocket had little white stones. And in a third little pouch, he'd enter, he did something virtuous, he did something non-virtuous, and at the end of the day, he'd analyze the stones in that final pouch. And so, you know, he examined himself every day, and I think that's so important to do. And just as an aside here, hang on to another piece of that fringe of the magic carpet. Wednesday was the full moon, as most of you know. But it was also a very special day in Tibetan Buddhist tradition. It was called Sakadawa. And Sakadawa is the day, the date or day, not all in the same year, of course, that the Buddha was born. The Buddha received his enlightenment, and the Buddha went into parinirvana, the great bliss, when he left this earth. And so this day is one of the great, great holy festivals in that tradition. And It is said that every virtuous deed we do, it's good to have those white stones handy, is magnified 100,000 times, the merit of that. And every non-virtuous thing that we do is also magnified by 100,000 times. And so I posted that on Facebook. A lot of people wrote me a thanks for that. But I also kind of conveyed that along our walks. You know, I met some people and we had a wonderful chat and they thought it was very special. I said it is. And then I explained this tradition to them and they loved that. So even, and these were Jewish women, one from Mexico and one from Ukraine. So, you know, toward the one, yeah, unity. So this idea of being mindful, you know that I noticed myself being exceptionally mindful on that day. You know, to continue that mindfulness is important. And to also not feel proud about that or pride about that, because we can. Oh, I'm doing so good. We do an exercise in my aerobics class where we're stretching the arms and she always says, now put your arm behind you and pat yourself on the back. And I always think, I don't know. I'm just going to stretch my arm. That idea of patting myself on the back, I don't know about that. I'll leave that to others. Okay. Well, if I haven't gotten you lost, we're now on the third point of view of the 3 points of God, and the last one is reality. The third is the philosophic view, and perhaps that's what we're really talking about in some ways today. And Anaya Khan calls this the reality of God. God is the beginning and end of all, having no beginning and no end. Again, Tibetan Buddhism says from beginningless time to unceasing time. In the Catholic Church, we say that glory be to the Father, Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was, the beginning is now, and ever shall be, world without end, amen, same. So, and I'm sure in other traditions we have that as well. So Murshid is quoting here next Ibn Arabi, and this is on the dissertation, the relationship between God and creation. The relationship between, have I lost you all? Are you with me still? Okay, thank you. Ibn Arabi, on the relationship between God and creation, says, inasmuch as the attributes of Wajud, we're going to talk about this because this becomes another slightly different name in the divine attributes. Inasmuch as the attributes, that's a capital A, of Wajud, spelled W-U-J-U-D, are manifest in the universe, it is God. So these attributes being manifest in the universe are God. God and creation are not identical, yet they're not separate. Again, this paradox, these maybe irreconcilable reconcilables. How would we look at that? How do we understand that? God and creation are not identical, yet they are not separate. One dough, different kinds of breads. A little bit about Wajud. In the Arabic language, the word typically translates, listen to this, existence, presence, being, substance, or entity. However, in the religion of Islam, it tends to take on a deeper meaning. And listen to this. I hope if nothing else goes in, you'll go back and reread this or take note and let this go in deeply. It is said that everything gains its wajud, its existence, everything gains its wajud by being found or perceived by God. Everything gains its wajud, its existence, its non-separateness, its presence, its being of substance, its entity, by being perceived or found by God. So while we're always seeking God, God is always seeking us towards the one united with all, towards the one united with all. Deep breath, we're moving on again. It's a deeper level of this that Murshid is gonna explain. And perhaps I should just take a moment because we're gonna go through now we're gonna go through 4 distinct aspects or steps in manifestation. And I'm going to take a little while with this because I think it's very important. I'm checking my time. I got half time. But Murshid goes deeper and deeper. He's like scraping away the surface for us to look at this in different ways. And I want you to keep in mind as we go from this paragraph into looking at these as divine names, that Arabic and Aramaic too, is a consonant-based language. So it's only the consonants that are written down. And I remember this became so profound. I had the great opportunity, some of you know, to be the guest of the Fulbright Foundation in Morocco for quite a while, 5 weeks. And it opened a lot of doors. So one of the doors that it opened was the King of Morocco's private library. And of course we were guarded and people were there with us to take us through. But, you know, I'm looking, it said that in that library of the King of Morocco is the oldest existing Quran. And I looked into it and I could see, because I know a little bit about Arabic because I lived in the Middle East and studied it a bit. It was true. There were no consonant markings. So when you look at Arabic, you're only looking at the consonant-based language and the markings above or below. It's a little bit like that in Tibetan too, interestingly enough. Those ancient languages, Sanskrit, change the meaning of the word. So it takes this this one word and it can change it into a noun, a verb, an adjective, an adverb, and those markings. Well, this is quite interesting when you think about the different interpretations of the Quran. It's based on the illumination of the soul that's interpreting it, because those markings will change the meaning altogether. So it becomes very open to interpretation. You can see that. I hope you can, because it was quite important for me to learn that. Then later, they had the Dead Sea Scrolls on exhibit in Kansas City. And the same thing was true of those scrolls, consonant-based language. Meaning changes by the way it's the vowels are placed around the consonants of the word. So, so now we're going to get into this a little bit more. The consciousness, in Murshid's words, the consciousness has taken four distinct steps in manifestation, which in Sufi terms is called first Ilm, Ishq, Wajud, and Shahud. Listen, Ilm is the stage in which consciousness acts as divine intelligence or knowledge. This is something that's unmanifest. It's all pervading. The only being, as it is said in prayer, the prayer. So this exists. It's not yet formed, it's divine intelligence or knowledge. Now listen to the next stage. Ishq is the stage when the activity of the rays of that consciousness are increased, and this causes confusion among the rays and made power out of the intelligence. So this all-pervading, it's like that Dharmakaya. Everything and nothing exist at the same time. And then Ishq happens. And it creates movement and it can create confusion because it starts to create multiplicity. And this power is made out of this intelligence, which in very simple terms is called will, but in poetical terms is called love. Ishq. The third step is Wajud. This is the creation of the vehicles. And it's interesting, again, this term vehicles, it reveals to me that Murshid did, as they say, go and study with various teachers in the Himalayan mountains. Vehicles is a term that's also used in Tibetan Buddhism. And those are things that are said to be the mind and the body. They are vehicles through which life is experienced, but on the surface. And the fourth step is the consciousness experienced in life through the from the depths to the heights. From the depths of the depths to the height of the height, which is called Shuhud, which fulfills the purpose of manifestation. Now, if you'll allow me, I always say, you know, all these opportunities that I've had to meet great beings and go to these amazing places to study are not just for me. I'm not to keep them. I have to share them. So if you'll allow me, again, when I was in Morocco, we were in Marrakesh and we were at a great mosque. And I remember, you know, I'm a visual artist, so I noticed details about things. And there was this beautiful carved wooden balcony that allowed the breeze to flow in from the sides, the front and the back, and go up into this space. But this is what I saw, and I think it describes this, because you know that in Islam, they're really, it's not pictorial, it's non-pictorial, therefore it's abstract. So they use these abstract forms to express these deep spiritual concepts or ideas. So the first, there were four panels. I have to dig up that image, it's on another computer. The first panel was this, like this, the shape, an X. The next panel this is the ilm. The next panel was like starting to break apart, so these four shapes were like starting to twirl. We could call that ishq. So again, ilm, the stillness, ishq, the stirring that leads to will, we could say even desire and passion to know something, okay? And then wajid, these forms started to come back together in some way, and those are the vehicles of the mind, and there were four of them, you know, these four shapes started to move. These could be considered the vehicles through which we start to experience the world. There was an expansion, okay? And then the fourth panel was a contraction. I don't know if I can quite make that shape. It was a square. It came back into an equilateral square. So think about that. You're looking up, the air is coming through. You're looking at this beautiful carved balcony and you see the cross, ilm, stationary. It starts to move and turn. It's starting to stir and it becomes ishq. It's spreading apart even more, and that becomes the wajid, the vehicles for experiencing manifestation. And then it comes together in this square, manifestation. That's all I remember, but I suspect if I had continued to look, perhaps it continued around that balcony. Now, the interesting thing is, those of you that have been able to witness, not the improvise that we sometimes see, and that's not a criticism, it is a fact. But if you've seen the real, and you can go on YouTube, and you've seen the dervish turn, you know, again, in Turkey on another journey, I was able to see that several times, as many times as I possibly could. I wanted to experience it. But again, the dervishes enter in stillness. They're shrouded. They're in fact one stroke. Ilm. They start to unshroud themselves. It's the ishq being revealed. They start to move and turn. This is the wajid, the vehicle of creation manifesting. And they come back to stillness. Shahid, or shuhud in this instance, the purpose of manifestation. And in fact, if you really analyze it or look it up, there are four distinct phases to the dervish turn. So again, it's there symbolically. Deep breath. So now I'd like to bring this into a practice. And we're very close to the end. And if there are any questions or comments, I invite you to make them at the end. So, as I said, this is a consonant-based language. So, I, which is not necessarily a vowel in Arabic, I-L-M becomes alim when it's highlighted in a certain way. We know this to be one of the sacred names of God. Revelatory. What does it say? This is an aspect of God that is divine intelligence. Divine, but it's all pervading. It's all pervading. It's out there. It's in everything. It's through everything. It embraces everything. It's interesting to note that this name also embraces two other qualities, and I want to talk about that too. It embraces Kabir, and Kabir is this inner world, looking towards the inner world. It could be considered this, and it keeps moving and moving till it becomes Shahid, the knowledge of the outer world. But the knowledge of the outer world, I'll talk about it in a minute, because it's going to be one of the Wazifas we'll work with. And then from Alim, this all-pervading presence of divine intelligence, divine wisdom, divine knowledge, there's Ishq. And remember, Ishq is this excitation of this all-pervaded, all-pervadingness. Is that a word? I can make them up. And it starts to get a little, it gets a stirring. And this term, it's interesting to note that Sufis have always used the word hu, that means love, but it also, you know, I've heard it interpreted different ways, like God is here right now, God is everywhere. But they started to use in the medieval times, which was such a mystical time, think about it, this word Ishq, okay? It's one of those stages of consciousness. They started to use Ishq and it, as this non-rational, all-inclusive, overwhelming love for God or search for God. The love for God made us search for God. Okay, so we're going to go from Alim to Ishq, and then we're going to go to from Wajud becomes Wajid. We've worked with that before, and that means existence, presence, being found and perceived by God. I think that's why there's so much peace if you've done a retreat where at first you sit and your mind's and your body's but then it calms down and there's a great peace that comes. I think somehow it's not said in this way, but perhaps it's because we know that God is so near and that, you know, we're being found and perceived by God. And then the last one is Shahud. That's one of the stages of consciousness, which becomes Shahid. And this is divine witnessing. It's viewing, observing things deeply. These words have such vast meanings. It's like I'm not capable of it quite explaining, but I hope you can capture something. So I kind of wrote something for myself, and maybe this is my words, they're not Mersh's, and maybe they'll be meaningless, but hopefully it's helpful in some way. So in my own words, I thought, Alim is divine knowledge that gives rise to passion out of desire to be known to itself. This passion in turn leads to the development of the will towards the desire for this divine knowledge, which is Ishq. This willful and passionate desire leads to ecstasy. Because I don't think I said that. Let me go back. This is very important. Wajud becomes Wajid. And again, it's being found or perceived by God, but it's an ecstasy that is spontaneous in manifestation that awakens, and with that, it starts to gleam or glimmer. There's a light, there's a shining that's the shining in us, like the shining of the stars. So it's this twinkling, this glimmering within our being. And then that becomes Shahid. So let me go back and read my simple little version of this. Alim is the divine knowledge that gives rise to passion out of a desire to know itself. This passion, in turn, leads to the development of the will towards the desire of the divine knowledge, ishq, this passion to be known. This willful or passionate desire leads to the ecstasy that glimmers and illuminates wajid. And it is this brilliant illuminating glimmer that opens us to the revelation through witnessing. So I'd like us to do this practice together. And then there's a few more statements by Murshid and then we close. So it's a little bit complex. I've been working with it over the last month myself, and hopefully it's these four sacred names together, and it's not typical. We will do a wazifa singularly, sometimes in tandem, but it's not typical. I do know, though, that in my own life, Pir Vilayat and I, when I was in that school, esoteric school, and he was alive, whenever we were together, we had the opportunity to meet privately, and invariably, he would give me my practices, one practice, but four wazifas together. It shows a kind of progression as it is here, and it helps us evolve in our understanding. So if you can do this practice through this, you know, coming time, especially in our Murid circle, then this will be the next thing to explore. So I'm going to say it three times in a certain way, and then we're going to do it together. The first and the last word are intoned, again thinking of the cross coming into the square. And then the other two are sort of swirling around. Listen, I'll do it three times, and then I'll pause, then we'll do it together. 11 times, aloud. Ya Ali, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid. Ya Ali, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid. And please, when we say the words Alim, you know, because it's consonant based, be sure, Alim, feel the vibration of okay? Likewise, ishq, what does that do? For me, it's like popping the, you know, cap on the heart. Wajid. It's another little kick. Wajid. And then shahid. There's something very beautiful when we emphasize those consonants. So I'll do it one more time. Then we'll join in, but remember, put the emphasis on the consonants as well as the vowels. Now, Aleem and Shahid have that long E sound, which also does something to the various centers. So I'll do it one more time. Ya Aleem. Ya Ishq. Ya Wajid. Ya Shahid. Okay, 11 times together, please. Ya Ali, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid. Ya Shahid, Ya Aleem, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid, Ya Aleem. Ya Wajid, Yashahid, Ya'alim, Ya'ishq, Ya'wajid, Ya'shahid, Ya'alim. Wajid, Ya Shahid, Ya Alim, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid, Ya Alim, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid, Ya Alim, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid. Ya Alim, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid, last time, Ya Alim, Ya Wajid, no, sorry, Ya Alim. Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid. Notice what's happening around you and through you. All-pervading consciousness through our great passion and thirst to know God propels us through our various vehicles to be perceived through this stirring which glimmers and shimmers and is witnessed by God. Ya Alim, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shahid. So I'll continue with these few more lines of Murshid. He says, the divisions of the one into the many are caused by light and shade. If we looked keenly into life, both within and without, we would realize clearly there is one life, one light, which appears divided and made into many by different shades. Again, my words, my example, like Padre Pio says, one bread, many forms, many loaves. It's interesting, think about it. You remember the story of Jesus turning the one loaf into many. Perhaps there's another mystical meaning in that. Take this, this is my body. One loaf, many. As the Sufi mystic has said, the universe is the manifestation of God, which from God's own unity, God created variety, through elaborateness and complexity, which from God's own unity, God created variety through elaborateness and complexity, and thereby the state of many names and forms that can be therefore be distinguished as God, who is worthy of all praise and worship. The purpose of our life on earth is to come and see all the distinctions and differences, but not to be congested. Interesting word, isn't it, that Murshid uses? To not be congested by them. See all the distinctions and differences, but not be congested. Well, think about what that word congested means. We know what it feels like in our chest. We can't breathe. We know what it's like in traffic. We can't move. To not be congested through elaborateness and complexity, and thereby the state of many names and forms, which are birthed out of elaborateness and congestedness. Excuse me, elaborateness and complexity that can lead to congestedness. And can therefore, okay, I'm going to start all over again because I'm dividing it up too much. As a Sufi mystic has said, the universe is manifestation of God. From God's own unity, God created variety through elaborateness and complexity, and thereby the state of many names and forms that can therefore be distinguished as God, who is worthy of all praise and worship. I like this little story that someone told me. She was actually a woman of great, it was a banking family in Kansas City, and the woman was a mature woman, and she was a spiritual woman. She didn't reveal that to many, but we had a working relationship as a artist and designer. I had created some things for she and her husband, and also for their home decor. And we would have these cheese sandwiches around the island in their kitchen. They had a huge mansion. We always would meet in the kitchen. She said, come to the back door, let's meet in the kitchen. She was of the Christian Science faith, and she had a deep, deep belief in the healing of God. And she confessed to me, you know, she said, oh, I'm not doing facelifts. I'm not worried about all those nails and all that stuff. She said, she was a very beautiful woman, but you know, aging. And so, but she wasn't fanciful in that way. She was very real. And she said to me, you know, I have to go to all these social functions because of my standing in the community. And she said, you know how I enter the room? I thought it was very beautiful, and it kind of relates to this, to not be congested by the complexity and elaborateness of names and forms. She said, every time I enter the room, I put this prayer in my heart and my soul. May the Christ in me meet the Christ in them. It's very beautiful. It's like a namaste, namaskar, bowing to that divine presence in each being. Couple more sentences by our Murshid. The purpose of our life on earth is to come and see the distinctions, to come and see all the distinctions and all the differences, but not to be congested by them. I've just read this. Meaning, don't be confused by the uniqueness of objects and things. We should go on rising above them and at the same time experiencing them all. Does that sound familiar from the prayer cantoon? Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Murshid Hidayat, in his later years, you know, he was very particular and strict about the prayers. People would sometimes change a word. He didn't like it much. But he himself began to eliminate the word men. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. And it usually says men. He sometimes would say it under his breath, but it gives a whole new meaning, and it emphasizes this teaching to leave off the word men, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. And that's that Shaheed, rising above, seeing everything, the unity in everything. Last few statements of Murshid's on this teaching. seeing the nature and the character of life, the Sufi says that it is not very important to distinguish between two opposites. What is most important is to recognize the one, it's a capital O, the one which is hiding behind it all, the one that's hiding behind it all. Naturally, after realizing life, the Sufi climbs the ladder which leads to unity. To the idea of unity, which comes through the synthesis of life, by seeing one in all things and in all beings. Easy said, not so easy to do, but this is our goal. This is our goal. Ya Aleem, Ya Ishq, Ya Wajid, Ya Shaheed. Let us say the prayer Khatun together in closing. And say this prayer, knowing that God is watching you, perceiving you, and it is your dancing cells of your individuated universe that's united with the whole universe, towards the one united with all. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Unite us all in thy perfect being. Send out all wholesomeness, anything that's been created of good here together. Let's send it out to the whole universe and let it touch those who need it the most. How's that?